G.I. Joe Sigma 6, code name for a highly trained special mission force. Its objective, stop Cobra, stop Cobra.
Sigma 6, be a hero.
G.I.
Joe will turn the tide.
Be a hero.
Sigma 6 is on your side.
Be a hero.
Be the best of the best.
Whenever there's a mission, G.I. Joe is there.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. Doing stuff new in 2024. This is it, everybody. The official beginning of season 7. We're in season 7 now, right?
87. Oh,
well, this is the first episode of Sigma 6, so it must be the first episode of the new season.
But we've been watching Sigma 6 for 60 years, it feels like.
Wait a minute. No, we have been in season 7.
So we're in season 8 now. The Ocho.
Wow, we are running like everybody. Poorly oiled machine here in 2024. We are falling apart.
We are desperately in need of some WD-40. That is a fact.
Or WD-41 in your case, because you're off by one.
That's a pretty good point. Anyway, this is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
I am Robert Clark Chan, and that is the only clean introduction you're going to get from me all season long.
Hey, you know what, then? I'm excited to have been a part of it.
Well, I tried to introduce myself, and I got talked over, which seems like it's 2024 in some places and 1954 in others.
It does feel like we've been doing this podcast since 1954, so I'll agree with you.
It's funny because the Detroit Lions,
everybody,
Detroit Lions are having their best season since 1954. So let's get excited.
Do not start this off with that.
All I want to talk about right now, quite honestly.
I mean, I would think that Gina would love talking about football.
That's a great point, Gina. Could you tell them about your big fantasy football victory?
Yeah, so I won a thing that adults play, which is they like move little football figurines around on a board and place mm-hmm. them in places. Like, it's like Stratego.
Yeah, you're talking about Blood Bowl.
huge Blood Bowl fan right here, number one and only.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Chan's the one who made the Blood Bowl reference, honestly, I could end the show right here. I'm happy.
I need nothing more. One of the things that I got for you in the UK is a picture of a Games Workshop place in Stratford-upon-Avon. There's
You're
just
God dang right.
Just walking around, and all of a sudden I'm like, is that a Warhammer? It's a huge Warhammer sign. Look, out there.
The thing what I the will hell? Tell you, Robert Clark Chan, is that Games Workshop, of course, international corporation that I used to work for. Yes, most people know this. UK, England is roughly the size of what? The state of Mississippi? It's not particularly big. But there are, I believe, twice as many Games Workshop stores in that one country as there are in the entire United States. So, yes, no doubt you found a Games Workshop store or two or 20 in your travels.
In the home, in the hometown of William Shakespeare.
Shakespeare would have had it no other way.
I imagine.
If Shakespeare was alive today, he would have a Blood Bowl team. That's all I'm trying to say.
Who's to say he's not alive today? We don't Thank know who's you. Still alive. The earth is flat. Elvis is not dead. And William Shakespeare has been infusing himself with the blood of 12-year-olds for 100 years.
Wait, who's that talking? Do they introduce themselves?
I did it, so you have to do it.
I'm 2024 as Gina Ippolito, leaner and meaner.
All right. Hey. Those trips are, you know, trimming you down. That's exciting to hear.
Is it possible for you to get leaner and meaner?
You can't go into negatives, Gina. That's not how weight works. Oh my gracious. Anyway, I'm excited because this is season 8. I'm excited because this is G.I. Joe Sigma 6 episode 14. I've been waiting for months to do another Sigma 6 episode. You know I have. And so we got this is episode 14, the first episode of the second season of Sigma 6. It is called Hidden, and it takes place starting in London. Robert Clark Chan, I just wrote here. Okay, Chan, tell your stories.
Do not tell your stories, Chan. We need to stay on track for G.I. Joe. You're allowed to interject anecdotes every now and then, but you're not allowed to show your vacation photos on a podcast for 4 hours.
Did I mention that I got a bunch of snacks and candies at the airport and brought them home for us sample?
Oh, oh shit. Boy.
I mean,
whole lot of crumpets.
Nary a crumpet to be found.
Dang. Sadly. Dang.
I mean, crumpet is just a honestly
a dry biscuit.
It's a watered down goddamn English muffin.
That's true.
Wow.
Whole lot of PB Tibbs tea.
PG Tips tea. And
same thing.
No, I went trying to find coffee in that misbegotten country, and
who the hell are you, Ted Lasso? Coffee.
Nobody like Americanos are acceptable, like they're in the ballpark.
Why would you get coffee if you, when I was in Ireland, I didn't get coffee. I ordered Irish breakfast tea, whiskey, and beer. What is wrong with you, Chan?
Like all wow. at once? Jesus. That sounds monstrously unpleasant.
Please. Chan is the one person who would go to England and then make his own biscuits all night for the next day. A la Ted Lasso.
I mean, oh, okay. You mean biscuits like cookies.
Biscuits with biscuits, the boss. Like yeah.
Because I've been told that scones would be great there. And I did not have. No, I had a scone and it was fine, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all that.
Sounds like you went to the wrong place.
The big question I have is, like, you know, people talk a lot about British cuisine. So how was the Indian food there?
Actually real good.
Yeah, I was going to say my sister-in-law is from England and everyone raves about their Indian food there.
It was one of the things that I was like, we didn't get a chance to like get to a really fancy place. So like at some point, we're just going to have to like order takeout or whatever. And so we just got like a place that was close to us, just a place. And it was real good. So
yeah, that's undisputed that England has really, really good Indian food.
Yeah. I wonder how they manage that. That's so weird that, you know, they're England, but they have really good Indian food. I mean, nobody can tell. Nobody.
Listen, if you're going to conquer something, you'd better get their best food afterwards.
We went to many places, including, more than one, like excellent, British food place, you know, like a expensive, like
Gordon Ramsay, like, obviously, like
a 500-year-old pub. We went to a Gordon Ramsay restaurant, mm-hmm. and
you guys didn't like it.
Well, I did fine. There was another dish that was like fish and chips. Swear to God, the fish was like 20 inches long. It was ridiculously big, and it was kind of bland. And then, of course, the child, the 6-year-old, does not eat anything anymore. Absolutely nothing that is not.
That's why you don't take a 6-year-old on a fancy vacation, sir.
Thank you. Leave him home.
Yeah.
Well, this is so that he'll remember when we're old and infirm that he owes us.
No, okay. You got to. You know that's why you wait until they're like 11 when they can remember.
You mean when I'm too old to climb the friggin' stairs in the tube over there? Hell no. Jay,
that's not that many years from now.
It is not. It is really not.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
But all of the British food was basically acceptable at best and subpar at worst. Whereas like all of the non-British stuff, yeah, like the Indian food and some other stuff was all fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
We went to Dishoom, which was like a like an Iranian cafe kind of place. Amazing food. I had the breakfast, you know, the traditional English breakfast, but done, you know, with like an Iranian flair. That was amazing. The one that I had of the actual English breakfast from a place that was like the highest rated English breakfast place on Yelp or something like that. Not that great.
I stayed in on New Year's Eve because I did a big thing on New Year's Day at my friend's brewery, and I didn't feel like being sleepy and hungover on New Year's Day. But what I did do on New Year's Eve was impulse buy tickets to Scotland at 7 o'clock at night.
All right.
I mean, to be fair, I've been planning a trip for a while. I just like never pulled the trigger, but like I do have already have my like three guidebooks that I bought. And I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. It's New Year's. I'm gonna buy these tickets in 2023 and this is how I'll close out the year.
It's pretty solid. You know, I just stayed home and did nothing with children on New Year's Eve. But on New Year's Day, I went to a place called the Rose Bowl to watch Michigan defeat the mighty Alabama Crimson Tide to advance to the college football finals. As you listen to this now, you know how they did in those finals, but we have not played that game yet. It was one of the greatest events I've ever been to in my entire life. It was amazing.
Didn't the tickets cost like as much as we spent to go to England?
So we're talking about G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe Sigma 6 Hidden. Very, very interesting episode. Now,
does your wife know how much you spent on those tickets?
So we open in London, but there's a figure implausibly on a pole blowing in the wind, really playing into that anime style. How did he get up on that pole? I don't know.
I can get up there. I can get up there.
Why is he Batmaning up there? I don't know.
You dare me? I can get up there.
They don't tell us anything about this dude. He just is there looking cool. And then we cut to Cobra. And at that point, I was like, okay, something's up with this episode.
Yes. Either,
like, I've missed, there's like a huge shift between last half season and this season. And I don't know what's going on, but we'll come to find out. Implausibly, I agree with you that this is possibly the best Sigma 6 episode to date.
Yes, I forgot everything that came before it. I even chatted you guys and I was like, well, crap, it's been too long. I remember nothing. So by that measure, yes, it's the best episode that I remember.
It's fair enough. It's probably the best episode of G.I. Joe you can possibly remember, quite honestly.
No, you shut your mouth. I've had enough years between the Sunboat era, original Sunboat era, now that it's nostalgia for me. And if there's one thing I take that really seriously, it's nostalgia.
I love to hear that because when we first opened, I felt like when we first started watching G.I. Joe, you were convinced none of this would imprint on you whatsoever.
Yeah, it's like when you like date a dude that's like kind of boring and like kind of terrible and you're like, ugh, but then you date like four really terrible dudes and you're like, well, remember that one guy that was acceptable?
Oh my God, are you going to go back and find that lawyer from like 14 years ago?
Oh, who was that? Yeah, I guess he would. Yeah. I guess one of the lawyers would qualify as acceptable, but not exciting. Yes, there you go. Right.
Hey, lock on. We found one, everybody.
I mean, that's me to a T. I'm the guy that like years later, you're like, I guess that wasn't as bad as the shit shows I've been dating since.
Oh no, Jan, that's terrible.
To be fair, though, you know, considering that I most of my dating history comes from the Midwest, I'm that exciting guy.
Because they're
all just like, oh man, he sometimes shows up on TV, and he's always like got internet things going on. He does a podcast. How about that? How exciting was that, man? That was a wild time for me.
It's a low bar,
Gina. I'm not trying to say anything else.
I hope all of the people that I knew back in Auburn, Washington, feel that way about me. I won't ever find out because I am never going back. I don't want to talk to any of those people ever again. But I hope that I'm like a legend, like a minor, like not Sir Mix-a-Lot big. I mean, that's
nobody wants that
guy to come out of Auburn. Yeah. But you know, just like third tier, like when you look up a Wikipedia and it's like someone who won two football championships in a row in high school in 1978. That's the level of celebrity I want in my hometown.
Chan, stop it. You'd never win two football championships in a row.
Oh, no, I'm just saying that's the I could make it to that level of fame. Bar. Like you do like two web series and that's about the level. That's okay, about the level you're right. You get for
I'm one web series away, baby. Let's go.
There you go. Okay. Make it happen.
So we do the opening credits, which are similar but different once again. It's fine. We cut back to, this is about the Terrordrome. We're going to the Terrordrome, everybody.
This ain't nothing wrong with that.
Way to the Terrordrome.
Welcome to the Terrordrome.
What I really liked about this, well, first off, Zartan and Cobra Commander having a chat, and I seem to remember, didn't Cobra Commander get arrested and captured at the end of season one?
I thought
that was at the beginning of season one, and he got out.
Beginning of season one, and he broke out? I don't know. Yeah. You're right. It's been, Gina, too many months since we watched this I really thought, maybe I'm thinking of the end, I don't know, of Deke era. You're right. Maybe beginning of season one of this.
It was the beginning of season one because we had a whole thing where we were like, what the hell happened? What did we miss? Blah, blah, blah. I agree that
yeah, you're right. He like, he got out and you're like, how'd he get out? Why is he not in jail? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We should probably just abandon G.I. Joe entirely.
I don't think that could possibly happen.
No, if I don't finish this before both of you are dead, I will force you. I will set up a video screen on your grave. Mm-hmm. And force you to finish it out, and then I will play the only the worst episodes on a loop for all eternity for you.
Okay, so I went back and looked at my notes. At the end, it was Zeus Part 2. That was the end of the first season. Duke and Cobra Commander finally had their one-on-one big anime fight, and at the end of it, Cobra Commander had a cool force field. Remember that? He escapes at the end, floods the chamber, and then Duke escapes, and that's basically the end of season one. So he did not get captured. So I was totally wrong. But he does have Storm Shadow, and they're doing what's called the Terrordrome Project.
Dude, we need to just stop and talk about how what a great entrance Storm Shadow makes.
Like, thank
Storm
you.
Shadow just whoosh, out just of the appears shadows.
Out of the shadows, yeah.
And anybody who watches AEW knows that's some House of Black shit right there, and that is great.
It was great. And what I also liked is that Cobra Commander tells Storm Shadow to go on this mission, and Storm Shadow's like, "That's you sure that's what you want?
Not a great idea, boss."
He's like, "Yeah." He's basically just like, "This is not. It's not a good plan." And Cobra Commander's immediately like, "Are you second guessing me?" He's like, "Absolutely not. I'm gonna get that mission done. I'll see you later." And I just love that little gentle pushback, telling Cobra Commander that he's an idiot.
Yeah,
and then being so good at your job, it doesn't matter. You're going to go make it work anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to do this. I just want you to know that this is a bad idea.
Yeah,
so I can say I told you so when it all goes south.
Yeah, take this disc. Remember when discs were the center of everything, including 20 years ago in G.I. Joe of the 1980s, from when this was, because they needed a big old disc. Remember to shut down the Pyramid of Darkness, and then they came in on cows. Look. Good moments, one and all. But he says, Storm Shadow, take this disc to the UK.
Give me that big old disc.
Do the thing. Oh, boy, that just happened. We're talking about the plasma dome generator creates impenetrable defense. Plasma energy generator or plasma field generator. I mean, they call it a lot of different things. I just call it the peg.
What?
Because you love to get pegged?
100%. That is why he wants that.
Yeah, the plasma energy generator. I enjoy pegging. What's your point?
I
want to be protected, Gina.
Uncharacteristically, go back and play some of the intro because I did make a note about it.
Striking from the shadows, a ruthless organization named Cobra has returned to unleash an endless army of robotic troops and massive machines on the world.
You know what? That is some classic Cobra-ish. That is exactly what I want out of a ruthless terrorist organization. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't just want them to take over the world. I want them to take it over with giant fucking robots and huge tanks. And yes, a Terrordrome, because that is wild and over the top and good television.
Look, agreed. You're not going to have to convince me. I'm on board. I'm on board from the jump. We cut over to the intro, and they do refer to the G.I. Joe team as a bunch of young operatives, which I thought was a little strange. I know Scarlett's 14, but the rest of the crew I thought skewed slightly older.
No. They're all children. They've just been given a lot of Flintstones vitamins.
Yeah, child soldiers, every one of them.
That explains 10 million strong and growing. So we got to training for the Joe team. We got Duke. He's on this new quad called the Panther Quad that High Tech has created. So congratulations, High Tech. You invented an ATV. Kudos, man. You did it. Now we get a coded message. And what I love about this is Duke is out there training on the Panther Quad. High Tech, while he's sitting in the control room watching the training, goes, "Oh, guys, we got a coded message." And then literally 1 second later, it cuts a hard cut to Duke and Scarlett walking into High Tech's room. "We do not have time to wait for you." Audience, catch up. I know he's watching Duke on a battlefield, and 1 second later, Duke is talking to him in the room. But we don't have time for transitions here.
No, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And I loved it.
Part of the reason that I like this episode, because it's well-paced.
It's clipping along at a nice pace.
It is. And he finds out in the coded message, it basically says, Cobra wants the peg. The plasma energy like generator.
I don't think that's how it was phrased.
I mean, that's the Cobra wants pegging. That's what it said.
That's how Ray reads everything, though.
I mean, generally speaking, if I can help it. I also like that High Tech throws in the little line, "Oh, this plasma energy generator, it's based on my Sigma 6 research." All right, Dick. You get enough credit on this show.
Listen, he's got to remind people he's planning on asking his boss for a raise soon, so he has to lay the groundwork.
Come on, High Tech, put it in a one sheet and just keep it on your record, all right? We don't need you to keep talking about it all the freaking time.
Honestly, it was information that was extraneous, and if it doesn't actually affect the plot, like he figures out how to disable it because he built a technology or something, I don't want to hear it.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah, it's just him being a little bit of a needy bitch. That's what I'll say. Okay, so we cut to a transition. Now we got the Dreadnoks. And, you know, if you put the Dreadnoks in anything, you're making it better.
I do appreciate that they get some level of competence in this series.
They kind of do, yeah.
Like
maybe the most competence they've ever had.
Yeah, they pull off the thing they're trying to do. The only thing that ends up deep-sixing them is Zartan basically having a little too much Cobra Commander rub off on him.
Truth.
Because
he's rubbing off while the pegging's happening.
Yeah. Yes. Well, there's just nonstop pegging back and forth.
Yeah. Transitions do not apply here. Dreadnoks, we just cut to them driving off with the peg, the plasma energy generator. And then immediately Duke just steals it from him before we could even get our bearings. And we get a good old chase scene. And what do they call the Dreadnoks? What term, what insult do they come up with? Chan, do we have a little audio clip for this?
Heads up, Dreadnoks!
I love it. Absolutely love it. More of that. And what I liked about this a lot was some of the back and forth interplay between some of the tactics, because he steals the peg from them. He's riding away. They chase after him. His reinforcements, Scarlet's in an airship, and she starts shooting down some of the trees, and they end up blocking the way so the Dreadnoks can't get through. And then she flies overhead and scares them away. And I'm like, that's a pretty legitimate strategy to win this encounter as a third party. I loved it.
Yeah.
And then we cut to a figure watching them from a cliff. And I ask, is this the same figure from the opening scene? I'm not sure that it is. I don't actually think it is. Is that weird?
This was actually a little bit confusing. And I guess I don't hold it against you that you didn't pick up on it. Because it seems that this guy is like a sniper. And he shoots out like some rocks in a canyon so that Duke cannot escape.
Correct.
He's
targeting Duke at one point as well.
Yeah. But then he sees the peg and was like, okay, well, I go get that. That's the most important thing here. But I think it's supposed to be a Firefly. Who?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that's my question.
Is a good guy.
Wait,
well,
Firefly's not a good guy.
Chan, I have a theory. We get introduced to Firefly as a good guy here.
No, but he's clearly... Okay.
We know Firefly's a bad guy. He's obviously going to turn traitor at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but even here, he's like not like it's clear that he's a bad guy playing a good guy.
Well, they at the end, he's just like, hey, what's up, bud? You know, yeah. What's up, dickwad? And, you know, give him a...
It's wild he calls him a dickwad right there. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
What is he, a wad of dick? I mean, it doesn't even make sense.
It's he's not the nicest guy.
He's not friendly. And this is the thing, is because they're all a bunch of white people. And the nice guy we end up meeting has an eye patch. Except that this guy does not have an eye patch. So, yes, the original guy that we see on the standing implausibly on that pole has a cape. This guy does not have a cape. I get thrown a little bit by some of the specifics going on right here.
Yeah. All right. Well, whatever it is, I guess I have to like deduct some points for being a little confusing to three grown ass adults.
I wasn't confused.
It was, yeah, you are, because you still think the Firefly is a bad guy. And as the narrative lays out, obviously he's going to become a bad guy.
No,
the narrative at this point is that he's a good guy.
No, but like we already know Firefly as a character.
Yes.
Not in this series.
Not in this series.
No, but they're not going to bring back a bad guy from another series and all of a sudden make him a good guy.
They definitely could.
They did that with Storm Shadow in the Deke era G.I. Joe, even though he was a tweener. He went back and forth.
Yeah, that's totally different. He always had a code, but this is a bad character that they're introducing to be like, hey, remember this guy. He's not going to be good for long. He's a double agent.
Okay, so I'm rewatching some of the scenes right here, and in fact, he is wearing the same either like loose flannel or cape in this scene as he was in the beginning scene. So yeah. this is the same guy.
Yes,
I just didn't pick up on it.
Ugh.
And yeah, this guy is going to almost for sure end up being Firefly.
Yeah.
It is Firefly.
His name is Firefly.
Yeah. What are you Firefly. People talking about? Did we watch the same show? What's happening?
Oh, there it is. Okay. So he shoots the terrain down. Duke crashes. And then, sorry, High Tech, he smashes the Panther quad. It gets destroyed in the crash. And we get a matchup between one of the Dreadnoughts takes on Snake Eyes. 1v1. I think this is Machete. Machete. And there's no chance Snake Eyes loses a one-on-one fight to a Dreadnought ever. I just put that out there.
Yeah.
I just wrote, well, this is already over. And sure enough, Snake Eyes stomps him. Scarlet takes on, I believe, Ripper and maybe Buzzer, the other two. And actually, Scarlet gets blown out of the air.
Yeah, just like that dude that just jumped at a judge.
What?
Literally could be any guy jumping.
You guys need
judge
to be online more, okay? You didn't see the video of the guy that like got denied a like early release from prison, and he fucking vaults himself over. And there are some funny ass memes about it. He vaults himself over to attack the judge. It is the funniest thing. She's fine, which is why it's funny. I'll find it for you, but
I just found it.
Yeah, it reminded me of when Scarlet goes flying.
Listen, here's the deal, Gina. First off, shame on you. I am terminally online 24/7.
Well, this was hot
news.
Oh
my God. All right.
It's great, right? Wow, it's totally worth it. Put it in the chat so Chan can see it.
What?
All right, hold on a second. Oops.
I hate that I'm the person that's just saying this, but can we talk about the G.I. Joe now?
Yeah,
wow, look at that. We got him.
I'm saying she flew through the air just like a G.I. Joe, just like a moment in real life.
This is true. Chan, sorry, what do you want to add here?
No, I just want to move on. I want to get this goddamn thing over with. I do not want to be seeing dudes launching themselves at judges.
That's all I want to watch.
Yes,
I've
you
seen
do.
So many videos like this one. This one didn't register, but yes, this is pretty great, Gina. And thank you for telling me about it.
You're welcome.
It turns out that who blew Scarlet out of the air? It was Zartan in a giant airship. And now that he's taken out Scarlet, and literally he drops her ship. She's down for like basically the rest of the episode. It's kind of rad. Some of the actual things that happen in this episode are like, dude, more of this. You guys figured it out. Let's go. He goes after Snake Eyes next, who's just on a motorcycle, shoots a ton of lasers at him, takes out the motorcycle, at which point a new player joins the battle. Now, in my head, I'm like, oh, it's the same guy
right
from the cliff, right? That's what we're meant to think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not that same guy. He's a Brit, and he's got an eye patch, and he there's a huge air battle right here as the guy is in his own little like flying ship, and I was like, well, who's this going to end up being? I asked, is this the same guy as before? It is not. Upon further deduction, thank you, TV's Gina Ippolito, and sorry, 2024's Gina Ippolito.
Thank you.
They have a wonderful air battle that's a little like Star Trek II, a little Khan versus Kirk action, in that he has his Zartan gets his shields disabled. He gets his engines disabled, and he's just going to like, he's like, turn it around anyway. We're going to go get him. And he just gets, he's about to get blasted out of the, I love it, man. I love what's going on here. Zartan, one thing that really I love about G.I. Joe that really hit me while watching this couple of scenes is how if you're a member of G.I. Joe or Cobra, regardless of what your specialty is, you're going to be put in position that you are not prepared for. Zartan is a master of disguise, put in charge of being the admiral of an airship. Those skill sets don't line up.
He gets a throne in the ship.
He does, that is, yes.
You know, there are better uses of weight and space in a flying aircraft than that huge throne that he's in.
Yeah,
gold-plated.
Yeah, I love it. I love the fact that Zartan's little Peter's principles here. He's in a little bit over his head. He got promoted beyond his ability. And now he's just getting destroyed by this British fellow. I love it. So what ends up happening here is, let's see here. Okay, the Dreadnoks get the peg back. And Zartan shoots all his stuff. We just cut to Dreadnoks found it. Like, they're about to take off, and they turn. They're like, oh, there it is. Let's just grab it.
Yeah.
Which I kind of enjoyed.
Yeah.
Zartan blows out everything he can at this British guy's airship, which is very small. It's like a personal craft. And he just throws up all these personal, you know, field generators around him, this great defense, and he can't get through. So Zartan just takes off. He's like, look, if we can't hurt this guy, we're already a little bit weakened on our ship. We got to go. And so Dreadnoks get the peg, and those crew both basically disappear. They disappear so that Duke can get a new message from this mystery person. And the message says, join me here at these coordinates. And Duke says, I got a good idea who this guy is. So he says, Snake Eyes, Scarlet, go get the peg back. Because Zartan has it now. Because he's regrouped off camera with the Dreadnoks. And now he has the technology. And I'm going to go meet that guy. Here we go. Point W245, as we call it, literally on screen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We find out that the British guy is Lieutenant Stone.
Okay. A character from a previous iteration of G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe Extreme, except one now he's British with an eye patch.
Yeah.
Wait,
had an eye patch or a British accent.
He didn't. Is this the dude that wore the sunglasses?
I mean, everyone in G.I. Joe Extreme wore the sunglasses. You know, you're going to have to.
He wasn't the boss over them. It was Stone and
Sergeant Savage.
Fury. Stone and Savage. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
who's the guy with the glasses that I'm thinking of?
Oh, you're thinking of Clancy.
Clancy. That's right. Clancy.
Clancy.
Easily impersonated by Iron Claw.
Yes.
So spoiler alert for, you know, but we'd hope that you'd know that by now if you're on this episode of this show.
Yeah, that's what you get for not listening to every fucking episode we've ever uploaded.
Hey, what's wrong with you? What are you, ungrateful?
Don't you want your 10th sub free? You get a punch card if you listen to every episode.
We're not handing out free subs after every 10 episodes. Just so you're,
we could not afford that.
To be clear.
No, they don't call him Lieutenant Stone. They just call him Stone.
No.
But like,
yeah, because they would have to call him Lieutenant.
Character in G.I. Joe Extreme. So
Stone Cold Crazy Yo.
Also that.
Okay.
Why not?
That's it. That's all I got.
So, yeah, according to this officially, Lieutenant Stone is the name of three different fictional characters from the G.I. Joe franchise.
No, I hate this. Why?
Each one of them are featured in a different continuity. Two lieutenants appearing in both the animated series and comic books for G.I. Joe Extreme and G.I. Joe Sigma 6. And as a sergeant played by Brendan Fraser in the live-action film G.I. Yes. Joe Rise of Cobra.
Yes, yes, yes. I did see that when I Googled him, like, this episode. I was like, I know I'm supposed to know who Stone is, and I remember the name, and I Googled it, and the first image that came up was Brendan Fraser.
That's right. So Lieutenant Stone in the G.I. Joe Extreme was essentially the leader of the team. It was not Sergeant Savage. Lieutenant Stone was the calmer one who assembled the team and worked directly under Clancy, for those of you who remember. And Lieutenant Stone was sort of the duke of that operation. But he was decidedly not British.
Yeah, none of this sounds... This sounds vaguely familiar, but I need him to be consistently British or inconsistently American. Wait. What? Shut up.
Okay.
And just to show here, Lieutenant Stone is a British Joe agent in G.I. Joe Sigma 6. He's an experienced pilot and an old friend of Hawk and Duke. Duke and he were in ops training together, and he first appears in season 2 of the series. He and Firefly join the Sigma 6 team and officially hand over the Sea Titan to Duke. We'll get there. It becomes their new base. We'll get there. Stone had been overseeing the Sea Titan project on behalf of General Hawk. The ship functions as a self-sustained base, blah, 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 blah. We'll get to that stuff in a little bit. But yeah, Lieutenant Stone. So he is still Lieutenant Stone here, even though they didn't call him Lieutenant Stone. I call him Lieutenant Stone. I turned out to be right. Drop the bass, everybody. Ray got one right without being told. Thank you.
But in England, it's pronounced Lieutenant.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Crap.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
G.I. Joe, X-Wing.
It changes from a jet to an attack copter.
X-Wing, X-Wing, Cobra's gonna feel your sting.
Joining the attack is the G.I. Joe Mean Dog.
Nobody beats G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe Mean Dog. Mean Dog's got a bad bite, looking for Cobra and itching to fight. But nobody beats G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
X-Wing comes with pilot, Mean Dog with driver.
Joe.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Anyway, I found my place in the notes here. Killing Zartan it. Hooks up the weapon. Zartan has the peg, and he has now hooked up the peg to his ship while kind of putting repairs together. He brings it back to full capacity, now with the weapon attached to it. I don't know exactly how any of this works scientifically. Chan, I'm hoping you have an answer for me.
Nope. They hook it up to a plasma generator, which is roughly the same as, I don't know, you try and make your car go faster, so you just get like another car battery, set it down in the passenger seat, and just like hook it up to the AC vents.
That is how it works.
And all of a sudden,
I've done that.
Now you have a plasma field generated around you or something.
This makes sense to me.
No, it also kind of feels a little bit like the NO2 in a Fast and the Furious vehicle.
Yeah.
That's also true. That's also a real thing that happens.
That is a real thing that you can do. Whereas,
wait a minute, Chan, are you trying to say you can't just hook up a plasma energy generator to your flying starship? What are you talking about?
This was the only part. This is a thing that usually happens in a G.I. Joe episode. Some bonkers ass business that doesn't make any sense at all, unless you're like a 7-year-old boy. You're like, oh yeah, that's rad. A motorcycle on top of a tank on top of a helicopter. Usually that happens all the time. This is the only time that happens in this episode. The only time where I felt my
sphincter
my what
your sphincter
my I felt my sphincter all the way through. I fondle it like you would play with a fidget cube. Always when I'm watching television, but this was the only time where I was like, "Ah, that's kind of dumb and hokey and didn't need to be there."
It really is the pouring the nitro juice down the robot dog's throat of season two.
That's
And this is the point where Lieutenant Stone now is hanging out with Duke. They're meeting back up. They're introducing their crews. Stone introduces him to his second in command, Firefly. And I went, "Oh, wait a minute. Hold on now, everybody. Fire who?" He's a very, very bad member of Cobra. And I mean bad in the Michael Jackson way. He is a bad man.
Oh, hold up. Before we get there, Zartan gets defeated. Pull some pretty swank tactics, and they just...
Oh, that's where we're going next, yeah.
But as they're departing, we've got our...
Can I introduce this and lead us into this? Because I know exactly what you're about to do. Do you mind?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the scene. After we get introduced to Firefly, we go... You got Stone saying, "Ready the laser." Now, Stone is back now in his private flying vehicle, taking on Zartan for round two. He tells a team that we don't, have a ton of communication with. We don't know what their deal is yet. He says, "Ready the laser now." And then he flies out over the water. Zartan follows him. A bunch of laser beams shoot up from out of the water. And the plasma field for Zartan's ship goes down. I don't know how this works exactly. At which point we cut back to Zartan having to lick his wounds and flee that moment because he just got wrecked from underneath in an unexpected move. And what does his crew sound like?
21 and 24, right? Are those their numbers?
Oh, that's the henchman from Venture Brothers. This is easily...
"We're going to explode, sir! But I don't want to explode!"
Who does? My friend, who does?
You know what? I'm sure there's someone out there who's like, "That's how I want to go out."
That's it. Oh, Chen, did you also get the part before that section where they do a racka fracka?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I don't even know where that is. I do remember that.
It was right after he says you were 2 degrees off with your shot. Real dick move, by the way.
Yeah, that is, you don't want to tell your underlings.
He's not destroyed. He's just disabled. Yeah, you were two degrees off with your shot. A-hole. No wonder Firefly's going to turn traitor.
"You're 2 degrees off your shot. Must I do everything myself around here?"
We get a rack-a-fracka, everybody, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
That's something else.
And Firefly is right to be disgruntled in that moment. He crushed that moment.
This is when he decides to be bad, probably.
Yeah. This is it.
That's a villain origin story if ever I've seen one.
Damage my pride.
Granted, no, because we've already seen him doing stuff earlier, but he's probably taken this kind of abuse for a while now.
Yeah.
What I love about this is Zartan takes the shot, is very well disabled, and he's so pissed that he's going to lose this with a superior ship. He loops back around now that the submersible G.I. Joe Sigma 6 vehicle manned by Firefly is out of the water, and he wants to kamikaze pilot the submarine.
Yeah, he's prepared for death.
"What do you mean? You're going to turn around and ram him?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm going to slam him to the bottom of the ocean." I'm like, Zartan, no, this is why you don't put Master of Disguises in charge of airships. That is a terrible idea.
You've got an airplane carrier and you're going to kamikaze ram a dinghy. Like, you're going to go down when you hit this dinghy, but just... it doesn't matter what you lose so long as you take this dude out.
Yeah. I do like that. Like, he comes, he's going for it. Like, he is committed. He is committed like Dan Campbell going for a 2-point conversion from the 7-yard line. Thanks, 100%. Everybody.
I get Thank that. You, everybody. Yeah, totally.
And Firefly launches, quote unquote, a lot of blooming missiles. So many missiles that Zartan comments, "This was probably a mistake." At which point we get the "I don't want to explode" conversation, which I loved. And immediately they have to evacuate this giant airship. Zartan, you basic.
I again, the way it happens, like it isn't like a full on childlike Cobra Commander situation. He comes in with the overwhelming firepower. What? Oh shit! This guy's coming at me. No, we'll take him down. Ow, dude, that really hurt. No, we got to take him down. Oh my God, I'm not dead. We did everything. We're going to do whatever it takes to get him. Like, there's a build, and you can buy that a human being would kind of lose their shit this way.
Yes. Yes. It was phenomenal. It was great. I enjoyed this back and forth interplay so much. And I like the David versus Goliath and the fact that David has more tricks. And even when Goliath powers up, he gets tricked in a different way to bring him down. And it's just, there's a lot of great stuff happening in this episode.
It's all right.
Is this the impossibly rare Ray and Chan versus Gina episode?
No, I think it's good. I just like, it was hard for me to get back into it after we had been out of the game for so long.
Man, didn't take me long at all, but of course it didn't.
That's true.
We can't quite leave this yet because we're introducing people to the incredibly sexy Firefly.
He is a dreamboat.
From ops training.
Oh, really?
That is I want to bone.
No, he immediately ruins it though.
What does he though?
Yes.
His name is Stone. He and I used to have a lot of fun together.
100%.
Okay, hold on.
Not pegging. No,
it
no.
Be you pegging in this case, peg, no.
This is 100%. Yeah, we got drunk and experimented in college. So, conclusively, Duke here is bi, and Scarlett is like, I want to watch some of this go down. So,
I read it slightly different. Obviously, Duke and Lieutenant Stone did have some sort of physical relationship of that variety. I took it to mean that when they had fun, they went out and found a willing third party and that they, had three ways together in sort of a college bro kind of a situation. But yes, they did also, touch butts and stuff.
No, these two definitely had straight up homosexual relations. Yeah.
Interesting.
But here's what I will say. When Firefly is grossly hitting on Scarlett a second later and she's very uncomfortable, she then introduces him to her second boyfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Like she like very quickly is like, hey, have you met this fucking ninja? Because I have sex with him sometimes.
And you know what?
I do not want you to hit on me right now.
But there's been no time in my life when I've ever tried, quote unquote, spitting game. If she would have turned to the silent ninja Snake Eyes and said, this is actually my other guy, that you continue.
Yeah, and that's Firefly, what she was hoping.
For the record, did not continue.
That's what she was hoping. But he tries to be like buddy with him.
Well, now don't you have a sound poll for this?
Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah. I put two in the chat. So far, we've heard neither of them.
Wow.
Well,
who's sexist now, Chan?
Watching this video of some dude launching himself at a judge.
It's
so,
a great video, right?
It's a pretty great video.
All right. We're gonna go back to the first one that you asked for way back here. You got to bring these things up in the moment. Otherwise, we're just going to pass right by them.
Don't put that emotional labor on me.
I crashed the Panther quad and blacked out for a while.
This is just more evidence of how severely brain damaged this man is. And how at some point, and I hope we get to it in an iteration of G.I. Joe, at some point he is going to start acting erratically. And like no one is going to know. And it's going to be just like one thing a year that people are like, wow, it's like really. And then suddenly it's going to speed up and people are going to be like, hey, do you think that maybe all of those times that he blacked out after he got knocked on the head did something irreparable to his brain?
Yes, is the answer.
Definitely dying a slow death of Parkinson's. just like disintegrating before the other Joe's eyes. They can do nothing to help him despite all of the advances made in drinking robot dog technology.
Yeah, they should find that kid and give him robot Parkinson's technology.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually think that once he finds out, they'll like go on one last mission. There will be like a moment. I assume you've both seen the cinematic masterpiece Red. There will be a moment where they need a like a distraction, and it's like, here's the thing, we're surrounded by Cobra troops and they've got live ammo. One of us needs to go out there and they aren't coming back. And then like someone offers to go and Duke is like, it should be me.
Wait, now is this Red as in retired and extremely dangerous, or is this Red as in the Red, White and Blue trilogy of movies?
Like Krzysztof Kieslowski.
The art house films. Mm-hmm. Which one are you referring to, Gina?
Retired, extremely dangerous.
Great movie. I've seen that one.
It's fantastic.
Not the art house one.
No. And at some point you think Bruce Willis is going to kill himself. He's going to sacrifice himself. But really, they send the black dude.
And it always the way.
Christ, really?
I mean, to be fair, he is the oldest. He's ready to go out.
Yeah.
And it's Morgan Freeman, so.
Movies didn't used to be so woke, Chan. Get over it.
Here's the second clip that Gina asked for. This is the aforementioned Firefly hitting on Scarlet, and then Scarlet's rebuttal, and then Firefly's walking it back.
Those skills and that beauty surely makes you the ultimate Sigma 6 weapon.
How nice of you to say so. This is Snake Eyes.
Of course, the legendary ninja himself, Snake Eyes. Ooh. So tell me, what's the good word, ninja?
Ooh.
First of all, he's doing a Joe Bluth voice.
Michael.
Ooh, Snake Eyes.
It's not a
also
trick.
The way he talked to Scarlet is sort of how I see Gina's interactions with the writing staff when she joins the G.I. Joe Writers Room reboot in season 2.
We can only hope.
I'm trying to wish that into the universe.
Oh, wait, doing it to me or I'm doing it to them? I was picturing me doing the Joe Bluth voice to them.
I'll be honest, I'd seen it the other way around, but now I can't see it any other way than the one you just described.
I assume I'm the one doing the sexual harassing in this scenario.
I mean, it is going to be a bunch of 24-year-old 6'4" guys, so yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, makes everyone sense. Knows that that's who populates writers' rooms.
For cartoons, Gina, I assure you it is. And by the way, these aren't writers. These are people who are very good at specifying AI prompts.
Oh, okay. Then that tracks.
Yeah. I love that people say, have you seen it? I'm sure we've all seen on the internet where people are just like, I crafted this stellar set of prompts to get you this very unique image. And it's like, you're basically bragging that you figured out the ultimate settings to get your burrito cooked all the way through in the microwave.
Yeah. I mean, although
it's embarrassing.
Even microwave would impress me more than that, actually.
it's so bad. It's do the work. Get the skill, do the work. Idiot.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Anyway, Firefly is debonair guy. That's what I wrote here. I said, this is very weird. This is not the Firefly I know and love. And trust me, he's one of my favorite characters in the entire G.I. Joe universe. So one, I was not expecting him to get introduced. And number two, I was definitely not expecting him to get introduced in this way.
He's Joe
very
Bluth.
Strange.
I can't see him as anyone but Joe Bluth now.
Oh, man. And then finally, Lieutenant Stone gives Duke the Sea Titan, which is the submersible vehicle that they were shooting Zartan from. Duke and Sigma Six now get to use it as a base.
Which, by the way, they're all like surprised. Like, he clearly didn't tell them about this. Like, Scarlet's hold up, we live on this now? And I was like, damn, give a girl some notice.
I mean, fair. But this was a secret project that Hawk knew about, but did not. No, Duke maybe knew about it, but they didn't think they were getting it.
But he forgot from all the brain damage.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably true. Yeah.
It was originally not called the Sea Titan. It was called the Sea Word, which was, I don't know. I thought it was a much better name.
But. That's, you know what? Yeah, that's a way better name. If Chan, and the rare, in the rare possibility that I end up with a boat, it will now be called the C word.
Yes.
S-E-A-W-A-R-D.
Mm-hmm. Of course. How would you spell it any other way?
No, it'd be crafts in any other way. But we both know what's happening.
Sea crafts.
Are we done now?
No, because we have the epilogue of this episode. Because Storm Shadow didn't show up. A figure enters a Cobra disc in some sort. Like, there's a lot of, we don't know a lot of what's happening here. A figure who is clearly sinister, we assume is going to be Firefly, inserts a Cobra disc, turning a computer system into a Cobra system.
Dun, dun, dun.
What happened to Storm Shadow? He went on his mission in Act One, and much like Chekhov's Storm Shadow, he never went off.
He maybe have delivered it to Firefly.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, sneaking in and out of a Chekhov base ain't no small thing.
I mean, Storm Shadow, I just hope he like time, is playing hooky. I hope he's Ferris Buellering this mission.
Just getting a bowl of ramen while he was supposed to be out.
Yeah.
They just cut to him and he's still on the toilet. He's just taking a big dump on company time.
That dude does deserve a break every now and then. That's all I'm saying.
You know what? Yeah. I'm with that. So Cobra takes over the system, and that is the end of episode 14. I am excited. If this is what we're going to get, maybe Sigma 6 figured some poop out, and we're going to get some amazing television for the rest of this, knowing it's half the podcast, season 8.
I feel like this is a fluke. Like back when, what was it, the Deke era? There were like the two Christy Marks episodes.
We did. Yes, like, that was Deke era, yeah.
Oh, shit. Like, those are actually good. What the hell? Maybe they figured it out and then immediately just went right back to crap. Like, oh, it was just those two episodes that she wrote.
It just turns out Christy Marks is a fantastic writer and got the most out of this property that anybody could ever be expected to. And yeah, she wrote two of the top three, if not two of the top two episodes. I think Flint Dilly came back and wrote that one with the flying Serpentor who was trying to be a superhero. That was actually pretty awesome as well. So I would argue that maybe those are the top three episodes of Deke era.
I think they probably fired the previous season's writer's rooms for this show. And then that's why it's better. Also, these are our outlooks on life. Ray is stupidly optimistic for no reason with no proof. Chan is stupidly pessimistic for no reason with no proof. I relate everything back to my struggling career.
That's okay. You know what? That's like 90% accurate. Yeah. No notes.
No, that's great. And thank you, everybody, for joining us here in season 8. Can you believe it? Of knowing is half the podcast. So, Chan, before this episode drops, I'm going to need a new show logo from you.
Oh, shit. We just did this, I feel like.
Because we made two for season 7, and we said the other one will be season 8.
Oh.
Yeah, I already had it made into a phone case that I've been using for months now.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. You have. So if you could please turn that into a 1400 by 1400 pixel logo with the name of the show on it, that would be ideal.
I don't know. This feels like it's for me. Just me.
We'll all be hitting up Fiverr soon. Otherwise, you can find us at all the things. Patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Thank you so much for your support. We do appreciate you every single day. You can also find us at facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast or on Threads. At Knowing is Half the Podcast on Threads, everybody.
Threads. On Threads. Get it now, because it'll be probably done in a week.
Probably not with 100 million current active users, but, you know.
Keep telling yourself
active?
That.
Are they active, though?
Monthly active users, 100 million, yeah. To be fair, Twitter has 400 million monthly active users, so. And it took 17 years to get there as opposed to 5 months.
Oh, is this Threads also a flaming dumpster fire full of...
No, it's honestly pretty great because you can edit your threads within, I think, 30 minutes of posting them for free. And any trolls that appear to reply under your posts, you can just hide them and they'll never get interaction and you'll never have to see them again. Some great features that are anti-dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying Threads. It's pretty, I'm here for it. Me and Threads. Zuck, give me that check. Well, I was prepared to stop the show right there, but Robert Clark Chan wants to keep going. So, yeah. Chan, tell us more about London.
Oh, let me tell you, it is cold and wet, but the playgrounds there, my God, the playgrounds.
I mean, I thought the playgrounds were just giant Warhammer stores. Is that not accurate?
I mean, the children are all covered in paint.
What London did you go to again?
Wherever Cobra strikes, wherever they attack, G.I. Joe will fight. There's no turning back.
Yo, Joe!
G.I. Joe is there.
Sigma 6!
Hello, dear listeners. Do you enjoy playing video games with your best friends? Then I have the pod for you. I'm Philip, host of the Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Each week, my co-host Nave and I break down a cooperative experience in gaming. And we are always looking for new co-op partners to join us. So come play with us on the Gaming Together podcast.
So I'm standing over this toilet taking a piss, and I'm playing my Pokemon, and I dropped it in the toilet. I remember the Game Boy just tumbling into water. And I remember screaming for my mom, trying to get this Game Boy.
Wait, how old are you?
And she yelled at me. She yelled at me. And
oh, my God.
Like, traumatized. I was like, no, my Pokemon.
That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Come on down, co-op partners.